This is the July 10 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Jackie Vex from Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri, from Windsor, Illinois, and AgMarket.net, Matt Bennett, and from right here in Champaign County at Strategic Farm Marketing, we're joined by Dave Chatterton. We'll begin our program today by taking a look at the weather forecast going into next week with Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us. Let's jump right into this. Farmers in the Western Corn Belt would like farmers in the Eastern Corn Belt to have a drought. And consequently, farmers in the Eastern Corn Belt would like farmers in the Western Corn Belt to have a drought. Though I was looking at the rainfall, and I'm wondering whether either of those things are going to happen.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It's been one of those years where not only has it been tough for marketing, but it's been really tough for us to figure out the weather pattern. I hate to say this, but I think sometimes it's easier to forecast the weather than to market grain. I really do. But yeah, the rains have been troubling. So we'll get model runs that give us an idea about where the ridge is going to set up. And then what ends up happening is we've really not capped off the Gulf of Mexico. So there's just an abundant amount of moisture in the atmosphere such that any little trigger, a little updraft or a little outflow boundary or a weak front ends up kicking off quite a bit of precipitation. So earlier in the week, big rains in parts of Nebraska, big rains in the Dakotas, rain that came through the drought-parched areas of Minnesota and parts of southern Wisconsin. Then those storms moved through last night into parts of eastern Iowa, northern half of Illinois. They went through Michigan this morning. And so, you know, on the local farms, everybody's happy that they're getting some rain, but then they look at the maps and see that there was a lot of places that got rain. So what we end up having right now is what I kind of call a freckled garden spot, right? So there's pockets in there where you've got guys maybe in central and south central Iowa that missed out on all this, parts of east central Illinois that missed out on this, and pockets in Indiana and Ohio and Michigan that didn't quite get the rain that everybody else got. And so you end up having these very small areas where things are going to look really rough, and then other places that are not looking so bad. And of course, this is all before we start talking about some really serious heat moving in very soon. So it's a strange setup going into July, and it's one we have not seen in a while. And I'll tell you something, there is no good analog for this year up to this point.
How do the models handle it?
Not well. So mid-season, when the jet stream is this far to the north, they are not going to be able to handle picking up on these precipitation patterns well. And here's the reason why, okay? You know, we all hear about the European model. We hear about the GFS. These models are phenomenal in what they're able to do. But one thing that they cannot do is resolve cloud level, so cloud scale features. In other words, thunderstorms. They're not built to handle thunderstorms. In fact, there's not a computer fast enough on the face of the earth should we want to run these things at full cloud resolving scale. So that tells you where we stand with our weather forecasting. There's a lot of cool things that we can still invent and do. But because of that, they're not going to be able to pick up on these hit or miss thunderstorms weeks in advance. So what you end up getting is the model may call for dry weather, but you end up getting storms that pop up just on the heat. So what I always look for is anything shutting off the Gulf? And I haven't found anything that shut it off like it did in 2012, for example, or in the Southern Plains in 2011. So without those features calming down and shutting off, well, we just keep getting these storms that locally drop 1 to 2 inches of rain. And like I said, it seems to be freckling, you know, the Corn Belt with some really big yields in some places and other places missing out on it entirely.
So the heat next week will come with pop-up showers, I assume, from the Gulf of Mexico. How hot will it be?
Well, if we would have talked yesterday or the day before that, we had some model information that would have suggested that I'd be talking about maybe creeping up to triple digit heat. Now, that's before the heat index, but triple digit heat may be in parts of the Eastern Corn Belt, maybe getting as far north as I-80. But then we watched the trend over the last day and a half kind of knock those temperatures back now to the mid-90s. And it's funny, you know, the research would say for corn, sustained heat where you have afternoon highs above 97 for 4, 5, 6 days during pollination, or if your lows don't get down below about 72 to 75, well, then the plant is of course stressed and it'll of course knock back some yield. But what we're doing is we're flirting with those temperatures, right? We're getting lows that hit 70 and we're getting daytime highs that get to 95. And so we're just on the brink of what could be stress that could knock yields back across a broad sector of really good farm ground could really, you know, push markets in one way. But instead, we go right up, we toe the line, and we just never go past it. And as a result, we just keep seeing day after day the folks waiting on the weather to go bad somewhere, and it just gets close enough to almost get there, but never move over that line.
That's corn. Soybeans are an August crop. What's that month look like to you?
Well, it's strange. So last night, we just got brand new updates from the European weeklies. That's what it's called. So twice a week, on Monday night and on Thursday night, the European model will run out 46 days. And what we do is we look at it for any sort of a trend. And what it's done is it's kept August hot, but stormy. So nothing's shutting down that gulf. So now all of a sudden you look and see across the whole of where we go soybeans in the United States, and none of the models are pointing toward dry. So when you get that, who knows if it's going to happen or not, but everyone's going to see that trades soybeans and go, well, why in the world would I predict, you know, a massive drought and go completely contrarian to the best model in the world, you know, the European. And so that's what we seem to have for August. So it looks as if it's going to stay hot and stormy. And to be honest, that's a bit of a rare combination for a summer for us.
Anything from China this week?
Yeah, well, I'm waiting to see what we end up getting out of some reports from some boots on the ground in China, because there's a front there. It's called the Mayu Front. That's and it's a stationary front that tends to set up south of Beijing. Now, you may be seeing on some news reports the massive flooding along that front, and it's clipping some of their productive farm ground that, again, is south of Beijing. We really watch very closely north of the Korean Peninsula. That's where they have a lot of their farm ground that grows a lot of corn and soybeans. And I can't report much problems there, but there is flooding in China's southern growing areas, and it may become market newsworthy at some point as we move forward. But we'll have to just wait and see what happens there.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Now let's pick up with our Commodity Week program. Our panelists for the week included Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing right here in Champaign County, Illinois, along with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing in Hollister, Missouri. I started by asking Jackie about her reaction to this morning's reports.
I figured we'd trade this for 5 or 10 minutes and then we'd be off, onto the weather, especially in light of the fact that China came in and bought 48.7 million bushels of corn today and 15 million bushels of beans and 30 for this year, 33.7 for next year. But all of a sudden, you know, it just didn't happen. And I think that in looking around and trying to figure out why, it's probably related to some remarks that President Trump made on Air Force One, saying that a phase two deal right now with them is not on his mind. He said the relationships are not good because of the pandemic and the fact that they were able to keep it just in the province of Wuhan and not have it go anywhere else means that they could have really helped to stop it all the way around. So ultimately, you know, we were down on corn and beans both, and we've seemed to been holding on. I mean, you know, it wasn't like we were just plunging to the ground, but you looked at the corn report for the U.S., you know, we went down 675 million on carryout, so we're at 2.6 billion. Of course, we lost 995 just on production off of the acreage report last month. And so they did take off 200 million on feed, and I really question that number, but I've been around long enough to know that feed is what I would call their miscellaneous count. So if they're uncertain about something, feed is where they're going to make their adjustments. And I feel like they must be very uncertain about this report because they don't even have a deviation at the end of the report for corn or for beans. And so what that's saying to me is, you know, they're just not feeling extremely, at least not 90% confident about what's happening. You know, beans we saw actually gain some carry out, and that was because production went up by 10 million. They did increase crush, and pretty much everything else stayed the same. The interesting thing is they raised the average cash price for corn. They raised the average cash price for beans. And the carryout for wheat actually went up slightly, but they left that that number just the same. They didn't change that at all. But world level, this is what confuses me, you know, because I'm much more interested in what the world numbers are versus the U.S. numbers from a long-term perspective. At the world level, we actually lost 22.8 million metric tons on corn carryout. On the soybeans, we lost 1.3 million metric tons. And on wheat, we lost 1.4 about, or 1.3. And so to me, ultimately what that says is in the longer term, we should see some stabilization in the market. Personally, I hate USDA reports that are on a Friday. You never know if we have as many people trading as we normally would have, and therefore it always makes for a really, really difficult time. You know, you look at the bigger picture worldwide, we really didn't see any major changes coming out of any of the South American numbers, other than for 1920, they did raise the Brazilian bean crop from 124 up to 126. And, you know, that was in the market. A lot of this stuff, Todd, has been in the market just because so many of these numbers get adjusted due to the grain stocks report and the acreage report, you know, beans gained acres, all of those types of things. So I think today is a day to put into the books and move on and see once what Monday brings.
When you look forward into next week, producers still have old crop corn to sell. Do things change very much from this week to next week?
Well, I was hoping that they've made some sales, let's put it that way. Did things change very much for right now? We're still hanging on here. When I look at December corn, and you're talking old crop corn, of course, so let's go to September corn. When you look at September corn, we're sitting right just similar to December, and that is there's a really strong congestion area in this 337 area that we're trading in. So I do think this is a good example of why you do reward a rally, you know, and make sales when you have the opportunity to see the market go higher. Because just because it goes higher right now doesn't mean it's going to continue to go higher.
Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing. I know you were watching closely the reports as they were released this morning, and we've heard from Jackie Vakes how she felt about them as they first came out. What was your assessment?
Yeah, not, I mean, in the report itself, you know, pretty neutral on the top line numbers here. If you look at, you know, go to the bottom line carryout numbers for new crop, corn came in at 2648. We were expecting 2683. Beans very close, 425 versus an expectation of 416, and wheat even closer, 942 versus 948. So there's not a lot to work with. We can always debate the underlying numbers, but I think the message here is that the report, you know, did not give the bulls a lot new to work with here. We knew that the acreage adjustment would be made. We saw the USDA ratchet down demand and, you know, not only account for the old crop stocks, but also ratchet down demand in both corn and soybeans here in a way that, you know, gives us a little bit of more breathing room. And so that, I think, you know, combined with what Trump said about the trade deal on Friday, combined with a weather forecast, or at least the models that were leading us into a little bit of a wetter pattern for next week, at least on paper, have all kind of come and pressured this market today. And, you know, the USDA wasn't able to overcome that with any of their numbers here this morning.
How do producers deal with new crop sales going forward? Or is there anything to do at this point?
Well, hopefully you've been proactive and you have something on. If you don't, we know that there are a number of producers out there that still don't have much on. I think you need to be a seller on any kind of strength here. The seasonal, especially in the corn market here, the seasonal you know, pattern of where we're at in mid-July here and going forward, you know, is definitely against you historically. This could be that 1 in 10 or 1 in 20 year tide where, you know, we don't get any rain and pollination is a train wreck and all of those things come together, but it just doesn't look like that's the case in the models right now. It's certainly not going to be an ideal year. It's not going to be a record yielding year, but it looks like we don't have a disaster on our hands either. With that in mind and with carry out here, you know, established today for new crop at around 2.6 or 2.7 billion, we still have a very good cushion going forward against some yield problems. And when our models, when you run those and try and look at, okay, what happens if it stays dry for another 2 weeks? What happens, you know, if it stays warm? You know, we can start backing that yield off, but we don't get to a point where we're pushing the panic button on corn. So these corn here, you know, as we're talking today, is around 346. I think anything above into that 350 and particularly towards 360, the producers need to look very hard. And whether you're selling premium with, you know, accumulators or other types of structured products out in the front of the market, if you can store grain, or whether you're just doing HTAs with your elevator, just, you know, I would say be proactive. The market will not tend to earn this carry in corn. beans, we have a little bit better of an outlook there. And, you know, we're getting a setback here today, but we still think China will be a pretty aggressive buyer going forward just because of their needs. I think you can be a little bit more selective there. But again, I mean, we're playing in a defensive environment here, and you need to be proactive in looking out ahead.
So what exactly do you mean? Does that mean have your orders in and ready just to make the sales one way or the other, even if you don't like the cash price?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it means have a plan and be ready to execute when you get there, whether that's having a resting order or, hey, you know, an action point of what we need to do. So if we, let's say we get to D's corn at 355, how are you going to make that sale? Do you, you know, can you take advantage of the carry in the market by using your own bins, or do you need to deliver in the fall? Is there a premium structured product that will give you some kind of a premium? We've used accumulators this week for, let's say, against the March contract. I've gotten producers up towards that $4 level, and of course those come with caveats around them. But I think it's just realizing the fact that the ability for corn to sustain a rally in here is going to be a little bit tough. We did see China come in today and make another, you know, sizable corn purchase. As a matter of fact, the second biggest one-day purchase for corn, U.S. corn, that they've ever made. And the reaction, at least on Friday, was a 10-cent lower day. Now, granted, that had to do with the forecast and the USDA report as well, but the market isn't getting excited about about the propensity for China to do that. We had Trump out today talking about you know, the phase two part of the trade deal, and that he wasn't excited or wasn't actually even thinking about it at this point, that he's still upset with China, believes they could have handled the coronavirus situation much better, and, you know, obviously has some resentment toward that. So all that combined, I think, like I said, means, you know, whether it's putting a plan on paper, whether it's getting offers in and talking to your team about how to do that. But one way or the other, you know, it needs to get done, and burying your head in the sand here isn't going to help.
Isn't that the dance that the president and the Chinese have been doing all along, though? Sales are made, and then the president comes out with some kind of comment that is negative to the trade deal, and then more sales are made at some later date and time?
It's very much, you know, call it Groundhog Day. I remember the little wind-up ballerina that goes in circles. It just feels like it's a very circular thing here where it repeats the pattern that you just mentioned, Todd. And, you know, to some degree, I can see some validity towards President Trump keeping the pressure on China. We know that they're behind on the phase one targets. We know that they've got some work to do if we're going to get there. And matter of fact, I mean, I guess, to be honest, it looks very unlikely that we will even get close. But, you know, the more purchases, the better. So keeping some pressure on them certainly is a good thing. And we know that they have the need for beans. We know that the margins there work for corn as well, if they can issue the TRQs or whether they buy for their reserves. So there's certainly room for them to continue to buy from the U.S. I think it's going to be a very interesting political environment as we get closer and closer to that November election. And I think how they see Trump's reelection chances will dictate to some degree how aggressive they are at honoring those phase one targets.
When you look forward, what are the important things that you see beyond the August crop production report that's due out next month?
Well, I mean, one of the big things we just talked about, of course, is China and where we're going to go with that. I think secondly, you know, is, you know, how we finish out the season, what we're looking at. We've got a situation where I think storage will be at a premium again this fall. We've had the CBT adjust spread, you know, differentials through their storage rates. It will be a very interesting fall to see how the spreads and the basis numbers react to that. If you look ahead to next spring, I think we're looking at another situation where farmers are trying to stay ahead of and determine what government incentives and programs may be there, call them COVID programs or you know, whatever is going to be there. That's been a very big part of our cash flow the last year and a half, and I think it's going to be key going into 2020. When the bankers look at these situations, and if the USDA did raise their new crop on-farm price here by a dime in the reports today, but it's still, I think it's at $3.35, still not exactly a price that pencils very well for profitability. So it's going to be another, you know, pretty tight spring when you're talking to your banker and to your lender. And I think anything that you can do to kind of work your way ahead of that and stay in front of it and have a plan is going to be to your benefit.
If you talk to your crop insurance side, what are they telling you about crop insurance and its play for this year?
Well, you know, obviously, if you look at the guarantees here and you look at the spring price, whether if you were an MP or a 95% product person, you're in very good shape to trigger a payment. If you were looking at more of an 85% RP product versus 388 corn, you're talking somewhere in the mid 330s. You know, typically is where we'd be looking to at least get a payment started. So that safety net is underneath us right now. We're still in the process because of FSA working remotely and because of all the shutdowns and all the other programs, the CFAP and the EDIO and all the programs that the USDA is working through, you know, trying to get acreage reporting here done by July 15th has been a very big challenge. The FSA is having trouble getting the 578s out in a timely manner and getting the farmers through, and certainly we understand that, but RMA so far has not been willing to change anything. If we look for changes going ahead on the crop insurance side, really it's a little too early to see, you know, too much into that crystal ball of what will be, you know, on our radar and what will be the best products going forward for 2020. But certainly we'll be watching that here as the fall unfolds.
So Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net, we've heard, of course, from Dave Chatterton and from Jackie Vakes. We've talked about some of the numbers as they're related to this morning's USDA report, maybe some of the crop insurance decisions and how they will be impacted by a lower price potentially going all the way into the fall. Of course, that all depends on the weather and what crop conditions are like. I know that you talk with people across the whole of the Midwest on a fairly regular basis. What are you hearing from producers?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, the thing is that overall, I have to say that producers feel pretty good about their crop prospects. Now, there's no doubt that, you know, this heat certainly made people a little bit wary of what final production might look like. A little bit nervous. There's no question that the heat has certainly impacted the crop. To what degree? I mean, probably isn't maybe as much as what the bulls might want to say. I mean, because the bottom line is a lot of areas have been able to still catch some rain, and that's pretty much what you want. Now, obviously, we don't want overnight temperatures to be quite as high as what they were forecasted for next week, but you come in here Friday morning and the market's actually reacting, you know, negatively because the forecast is extracting some of that heat, some of that overnight heat. And that's exactly what this corn plant needs, is a little bit of a respite.
Yeah, so the report came out and the market reaction was to move lower. But you're suggesting a good part of that was as the weather forecast continued to move some of the heat from next week, because for the most part, the market actually and USDA's numbers were not very far apart. And I suppose AgMarket.net looked like it was kind of right on the money, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were pretty much dead on for the corn carry and bean carry. We felt pretty good about that, both on the U.S. and world basis. So we felt really good about our estimates after the report was released. But regardless, you know, you come out and literally whenever the report was released, we got a tweet from President Trump that said phase two deal is trade deal is unlikely. And then, of course, there's a story written up about it. And, you know, there's no question that that had an impact as well. So I said all along, if the report didn't have anything earth shattering in it, what you're likely to see is that we're going to be trading, you know, weather quite quickly, you know, after this report gets released. And I think that's exactly what we've seen happen, trading that and then trading some negativity, you know, with the comments from President Trump. Now, interestingly, I looked over at the Dow as soon as I saw those comments, and the Dow lost a little bit of steam, but I mean, it was still trading up 250 points at the time. So a pretty interesting way that our markets reacted, considering the phase two trade deal really wasn't, didn't have anything to do with ag as far as what we'd heard previously. That was mostly in the phase one trade deal.
Yeah, so the dance continues between China and the United States. The marketplace clearly getting relatively used to that, especially the Dow and the financial side, as you mentioned. Going forward, what are the opportunities producers should be watching for, in your opinion, and how do they take advantage of them?
You know, we had told producers to try to get some sales put in as we rallied this market. Now, with that being said, we didn't get a lot of opportunity. I mean, yeah, you took December corn about 40 cents off the lows, but then we're already right back here about 20 cents off the lows. And, you know, we got up to 363 basis of D's. The problem with that is you're still 25 cents below spring insurance price. And so for a producer that hasn't gotten pollinated yet and doesn't feel really good about production, that's a precarious situation to go into making major sales, because you really don't know what your production is, first of all. Obviously, price can have a big fluctuation depending on how many people get rain and how many don't. And so it kind of has you handcuffed. I mean, we haven't had years like this or even this far below the spring insurance price throughout the growing season. You know, we did a little bit of research on it, and since 2000, we've always at least traded to the spring insurance price during the growing season. So this is a little bit different beast we're dealing with this year. It's probably one of the more tougher marketing years that I can remember, just due to the fact that if you make a sale, you're making a lot of assumptions that may not necessarily come true.
Over the long term, meaning new crop, what do you feel comfortable with at this point for corn and for soybeans? And do you try to wait it out for better prices much, much later in the year?
That's a really good question as well. You know, the thing is that producers should certainly have had at least something sold. If they have nothing sold at this stage of the game, then they have to ask themselves, which they need to ask themselves this throughout the marketing year, you know, when am I going to need my money? And so if I'm going to need $100,000 during harvest, then obviously I've got some sales to make moving forward. Now, I would say next week, certainly we could come in here on Sunday night and have another excessively hot and dry forecast. If that's the case, there's no doubt they're going to have opportunities in here. But I want everyone to remember what Friday felt like. If we do get that run up on Sunday into Monday, I've got to think that, you know, one thing we're bad at, Todd, in my opinion, is we don't remember how bad things were before the market rallied. And then when the market starts rallying, we get bullish again. And I think we need to run our profitability scenarios and our break evens and look and see what kind of money we're making today with December corn trading down there, you know, 345, 347 category. And if we do get a chance to be back up to 363 and maybe break through that, you know, and see what's on the other side of that, then, you know, I want to do our numbers then as well. That way it kind of helps us be able to step in and set some floors, maybe sell a little bit of corn. Obviously, we're going to know more about our crop every day, whether we catch a rain or not, how we get through pollination. And I think as we learn more about our crop, we have to consistently take some risk off the table.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Matt Bennett at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing right here in Champaign County, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing from Hollister, Missouri. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.
From the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute, this is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. This last week felt like summer, and then some. Average July temperatures so far have ranged from the high 70s in northern Illinois to the low 80s in southern Illinois, within a degree of normal in southern Illinois, but between 5 and 10 degrees above normal in central and northern Illinois. Maximum temperatures this week were regularly in the low to mid 90s, with stations in Cook and Livingston counties observing triple-digit highs on Wednesday. The heat has been accompanied by high humidity, keeping nighttime minimum temperatures in the mid 60s to low 70s. This week's heat has exacerbated dryness, especially in areas of central and southeast Illinois. July total precipitation as of Thursday ranged from over 3 inches in part of southern Illinois to less than a tenth of an inch in north central Illinois. This week, the U.S. Drought Monitor expanded abnormally dry conditions in northwest and central Illinois and introduced moderate drought or D1 conditions in a small area between Mason and Woodford counties. However, late Thursday night and early Friday morning, a weak front moved through the state, and Kokoros observations indicate between a half an inch and 1.5 inches of rain fell across the northern half of the state. This rain is especially critical along the I-74 corridor between Peoria and Bloomington Normal, where areas of Tazewell and Woodford counties have received less than an inch of total precipitation last month. This rain will help at least maintain conditions as we move into what looks to be another hot, mostly dry week. 7-day forecasts call for precipitation totals less than a half an inch in southern and central Illinois and between a half and 3/4 of an inch in northern Illinois. Although it looks like we will get a break from the very hot weather this weekend, forecasted temperatures climb back into the low to mid-90s early next week. The Climate Prediction Center 8 to 14 day outlooks continue to show strongly elevated odds of warmer than normal conditions, as well as elevated chances of below normal precipitation across the state. The week 3 to 4 outlooks show much of the same, indicating that the relatively hot, dry weather we've experienced over the last few weeks will likely be with us through the later part of July. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford, wishing everyone a happy, healthy weekend.